The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Every morning is a new opportunity to take in the news of the day and the challenges of life and try to make sense of it all. Right now, we've got a show that tackles the topics and asks what you think. So get ready to start your day with a bold look at history as it happens. Let's learn, live, and sometimes laugh together. It's the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM, The Answer.
It is our third hour together. Let's make the most of it here on this Thursday, the 24th day of September. Tomorrow, Friday, boop, again. Another week in paradise. Golly, Moses, where does the time go? Well, as the days tick by, we get closer to debate night. Oh, my gosh. Go to my Twitter feed. I've got the link there for the Eventbrite. I think they probably have it at IPI.org as well. It is an opportunity for you to hang with my buddy Tom Giovanetti and me and my buddies Wade Emmert and Matt Makoviak. We're going to have a pre-debate online pregame party. So make your own guacamole and choose your own beverages. And from our respective homes, which is great because I can guarantee zero scene control at my house. I'm going to, you know, slink into the office there at the house. And whenever I do that, one thing is absolutely guaranteed, and that is that I'm going to have a golden retriever in my face, because he just needs to come in. He sits in a big chair that's over to the side of the desk, and he will not be. If I try to close the door, he ain't having it. So there may be excitement beyond the actual content of the wisdom from the guests for the. Let me see if they've got this at IPI.org, because it's on my Twitter feed at Mark Davis. There you go. Presidential debate pregame social hour. Woohoo! So at IPI.org, just click that and register. It's totally free. But you know what? You want God's honest truth? In the think tank world, good luck. And my friends at IPI, all they do is get out there and fight for liberty and fight for, you know, free markets and all the things that we value as conservatives. Except guess what they cannot do right now? Everything. You can't really get out and do fundraising events or schedule meetings where you're trying to garner support for the things you're trying to do. So if you do, hop onto IPI.org and get yourself through the Eventbrite link, all signed up to join us for the pregame presidential debate thing. There's a little donate box. Throw them 10 bucks. You know, or 5 or 30 or whatever you got. And it would just be so appreciated. No arm twisting, just a little suggestion. Now, if you do want some arm twisting, here we go, because this is something we're doing that is extremely important, and I'd love for you to be a part of it. We have run into this wonderful ministry called A Heart for Lebanon. Lebanon is in hell. The war in Syria, not over. Their estimates would take 50 years to rebuild the country. Refugee traffic left, right, up and down. Humanitarian aid never enough. It's desperate. And the Christian communities in particular in Lebanon are suffering. And as Christians in this part, or people of whatever faith in this part of the world, this is a moment where we can do something. The families we serve are the innocent victims of this war and this terror. And a single investment, they've taken this down to the last dime, of $116 will take care of two refugee families of six. Refugees are legally not permitted to own a business in Lebanon. Most cannot find work. Heart for Lebanon takes care of them. So we're doing two things. Let me send you to a phone number, or you can go to the link we have at 660amtheanswer.com. You got 20 bucks. This would be a great thing to do today. If you got 116, that will take care of two refugee families for just a wonderful, wonderful gesture that we can do. And we appreciate it so very, very much. And that phone number for them is 888-211-5944. 888-211-5944. Now, businesses, local businesses, let me have your attention. Because if you've got $2,500, it's like, oh boy, I wish I had $2,500. I hear you. But if you do, and you put it toward the business benefactor program that we have here at 660 AM, The Answer, your $2,500 goes straight to Heart for Lebanon, and we give you an ad campaign. you got your commercials running on the station. So just click contact us at 660amtheanswer.com, bottom of the page, bottom of our homepage. Click contact us and then just say, hey, I got a business, XYZ Widgets, and we got $2,500. Love for that. Go to Heart for Lebanon and run me some commercials, and our folks will get back in touch. And that's exactly what we'll do. Click contact us at the bottom of the page there at 660amtheanswer.com. All right, 866-660-5759, and we are in Fort Worth. Bill, hey, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you? Happy Thursday.
Hey, good morning, Mark. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I'm so sick of this mask thing. And to me, it seems unconstitutional. I don't know. I'd just like some clarification on it because I'm tired of being forced to wear a mask.
I know. The constitutional argument, just, I mean, I don't know. There's no apparent basis for arguing that somehow we are constitutionally protected from things that government can mandate for a finite period of time in a specific set of circumstances. The list is long of things that government can tell us to do for a finite amount of time under specific circumstances. The thing that's so frustrating about the whole COVID thing is we never know when this nonsense is going to end. It seems impervious even to good news, as the hospital beds are just fine, thank you, and the curves are headed down in many, many ways. And the other thing is we're all kind of suspicious of, well, not all, but there's some suspicion over the science of transmissibility anyway. Is this all rock solid enough? Does it warrant telling healthy grown-ups that they got to, you know, wrap crap around their face everywhere they go in life? It is a tough sell. Can it constitutionally be done? Probably so. You know, I think with every bit of energy that people are using to somehow argue that it's unconstitutional, how about using that energy to, you know, wash your dang hands, wear the stupid thing when you're not around people 6 feet away, and let's just get past this.
Yeah, it makes no sense because it's a face covering is what they require. I mean, you can wrap anything around your face, a bandana. You know, they're not requiring an actual protective face mask, you know, whatever model number it is. And so to me, that just screams BS.
Well, I mean, having something that impedes the flow of stuff into your mouth or out of your mouth is going to do something. I mean, it would seem just purely logically of some value. Is it a panacea? Is it the be-all and end-all? Probably not. But there it is. So let's slog through it and get to and dream of that. Now, here's the tricky thing. So we all say this, let's get through this where all of a sudden we won't have to do this anymore. How exactly is that going to happen? Where will the wisdom come from when we're at a point at which, from Governor Abbott down to local folks, who's going to be the public official with the stones to step forward and say, you know what? You don't have to wear the doggone things anymore. We will have been whipped into submission. We will have gotten sort of used to it, as much used to it as anybody can get. I'm sick of the doggone things, too, just like you. How'd you like to be the public official who issues a proclamation some day in the future that says, okay, you don't have to wear masks anymore. And then the next day, there's a spike. Nope. Every public official at every level is scared to death of that, which tells me we may be under these edicts for a torturously long time.
Well, I'm going to go down kicking and screaming. Thank you for taking my call, Mark.
I appreciate you. Thank you. Yeah, you know, it's because that's me. I'm singing the good guy chorus here. Just leave. Do what they say. Just, you know, don't be a jerk in public. Let's get through this and all of those things. I hate it. I hate that damn thing. Excuse me. I hate it on me. I hate it on you. When they slapped one on big techs, I about had an aneurysm. Just stop it. We get it. And at some point, and again, the light at the end of the tunnel is at some point we won't have to do this anymore. But when will that be? And again, who's going to be the public official who steps forward and says, you know, I don't think we have to do the mask thing anymore? Because then the blood will be on that person's hands if there's any kind of spike or any kind of super spreader event. You know, when people actually go back to breathing normally in public. Good luck with that. That's going to be, I mean, I guess we can call it a good problem to have. because when we're at the point where the argument can be made, and some people believe we're there already, where the argument can be made that we don't really need the masks anymore, it's good that we will have gotten to that point. But the tricky thing will be who is going to have the spine to step forward and say, okay, we hereby declare you don't need to wear a mask in public anymore. Whew. I cannot wait for that day. I do not know when it happens. I mean, literally, I don't know when it happens. But even when the landscape seems promising for that, in this era of cautiousness, and listen, this is a pretty conservative state with largely conservative leadership most of the time. God help California. Y'all be wearing masks for 10 years. And then, listen, while we're on a roll here, let's say we actually get through with the COVID. We're done with COVID. Yay. Wow. That was a nightmare. But hey, we're past it now and we're all, you know, living semi-normal lives and blah, blah, blah. But wait, coming from another far-flung area of the world, here comes, bliggy blaggy blue 25, you know, some new virus. I mean, and then we will have done this. We will have done this to ourselves. And I'm concerned that we didn't learn the lesson. And to me, now this is just me, the lesson is we did not have to destroy our economy by any stretch. We were wrong to do so. We were all in for virus mitigation, which is lovely. I like virus mitigation as much as the next person. But we destroyed the lives and livelihoods of tens of millions of people in order to keep X number of people from dying from a virus. Viruses kill people. This just in, viruses kill people. Always have, always will. What is left in our laps is the decision of how many lives and livelihoods and retirements and futures and mental health situations are we going to destroy in a quixotic attempt to bring virus transmission to zero. 866-660-5759. Last night on Laura Ingraham, there's a guy named Phil Kerpen, who I follow on Twitter. He's pretty good. K-E-R-P-E-N. He's with an outfit called the Committee to Unleash Prosperity. That's just a good name. And they keep track of these data, and they've been making the argument a long time that we've been way too slow to reopen. And he was on with Laura last night talking about the ridiculousness of continually closed schools.
Wouldn't happen because we watched what happened every place in the world when they opened schools, or it would be better to say what didn't happen. We didn't have outbreaks. We didn't have increased spread. Children seem to terminate infection chains, not to pass this on. And we have a lot of research now that children may even have a protective effect around adults because they expose them to other normal, everyday viruses that build up their immune systems. And so I'm not surprised by these results. I think this was expected. I think the media is very disappointed that they're not getting the big outbreaks that they were hoping for another big crisis and more scare stories. I don't know if you noticed the Washington Post headline on this actually said, you know, study shows no school outbreaks yet. They put the word yet in there, like they're still holding out hope that it's going to happen. And the other thing that was really interesting in this Brown study, Laura, is they actually found that among teachers, the infection rates were very, very low everywhere, but among teachers, they were slightly higher for the teachers who were doing remote instruction as opposed to the teachers who were doing in-classroom instruction of actual kids. So
go figure. Go figure. 866-660-5759. We are in Terrell. Jerry, hey, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
Hey, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you. Doing great.
First-time caller. Long
Thank
time.
You. Thank you for both.
All right. What I have had in mind for a few days is with regard to the kneeling and involving the NFL,
mm-hmm.
What about, I know some of the owners, they agree with it, but what about the situation where you could reduce the pay of the kneeling player commensurate with the loss of the percentage of loss of television revenue? I'm sure there's something in the bargaining agreement that would go absolutely berserk.
Well, you've answered your own question. The idea is, okay, a defensive tackle, Dontari Poe, the Cowboys seem to have lost about a quarter of their TV viewership. That may translate to revenue, so we're going to dock you 25% of your pay. Maybe you'll be interested in standing for the anthem next time. Lovely idea, probably almost contractually impossible to do. But you know what they can do? I'll tell you what Jerry can do. He can absolutely require the team to stand for the anthem. He's the owner of America's team. He can absolutely require them to stand for the anthem. His failure to do so, and all it takes is one kneeler to prove that he has failed to do so, is why MyTV is doing other things.
Well, I'd love to. My mind has been cooking with this. I'd love to see him come down from the press box and cut somebody on national television.
Well, or just listen. Just 3 short years ago, there seemed to be a rule that seems appropriate for America's team or any NFL team or any sports team, and that is that if you kneel, you will not play. If you kneel, you will not play. And it's funny, more than financially, that is a language players will understand, because all they want is to play. They want to play. They want to win. They want to do all the things that athletes, you know, that what they are there to do. But they also want to poison the experience with their own social justice warrior moment on other people's time. And that simply is never, ever right. Jerry, thank you, man. Appreciate it. Best to everybody in Terrell, and I'm glad you were here. 923, Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer.
Yeah, when the foghorn blows, I want to hear it. I don't have to fear that I want to rock your gypsy soul.
Little Van Morrison, the greatness of Into the Mystic.
Just like way back in the days of old.
Have you caught the Van Morrison news lately?
Yeah, magnificently we will fold into the mystic.
He recorded like 3 anti-lockdown songs over in the UK. Like, you know, the lockdowns are terrible and the science is all phony and we're all getting hosed. So the left is just unloading on Van Morrison. I haven't seen lyric sheets or the actual tunes, but if I get them, I'll play them because I love me some Van Morrison anyway. All right, it is 9:29. We are in Weatherford, in one town with a guy named after another. Dallas in Weatherford. How are you?
Good, Mark. How are you doing?
I am great. Nice to have you.
Hey, just to add to that last caller, if you really want to see the heads explode on the players that kneel, get Jerry Jones to add $1 million to, say, Wounded Warrior Project for every time they kneel. Or some other patriotic, you know.
Well, but okay, but these athletes would tell you that they would tell you they don't hate the whole country, even though they're doing something hateful to the whole country. If you want to make it really topical, let's have a $1 million donation to some Back the Blue organization. Hello.
Sure.
But in all honesty, there that becomes a tit for tat that evades the vital issue, and that is do not kneel for the anthem. If you kneel, you will not play, rather than, you know, come up with other ancillary things we might do. How about an owner acting like an owner, especially an owner of America's team? If you kneel, you will not play. Now, God bless you, Dallas. Appreciate it. God bless you, Dallas, and the people of Weatherford. Appreciate it very, very much. All right, 9:30. Here's something we always appreciate, the bottom of the hour news visit with Gordon Griffin. When we come back, I'm sure you've heard of a big lawsuit with a long list of, you know, conservative rock stars signed on suing Governor Abbott. Poor Governor Abbott, man. He can't go a day. But this time, the lawsuit about his extension of early voting. Well, you know me. I hate early voting. Always have. I've developed a certain permissiveness, sort of some latitude, maybe kind of about that here in the COVID era. All right, we're trying to keep fewer people in the polling places. I'm grudgingly willing to go along with it. But their argument in the lawsuit is that he can't do this. He just made up election law. So how's that lawsuit going to go? I've done a little homework, and I'll tell you about it next. 9:31, Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer. Here's Gordon in the newsroom. Little Pete Drogue and Northern Bound Train. 866-660-5759. All right, so I can't do this early voting lawsuit without taking you through a little brief history of me and our show and early voting and the conversations that we have had about this for a long time. It goes like this. Early voting sucks. Okay, sorry. It's a terrible idea because everybody loves it because it's so convenient. And I know in ordinary years, most of y'all love it because it's so convenient. Well, here's the thing. Maybe convenience is not the most important thing to democracy. Maybe the most important thing to democracy is reliability of the information window that's available to all people. And this notion of some people voting with an information window that's this long versus other people voting with an information window that's this long, that's for the birds, and it always has been. And it results in something that could happen. I mean, most of us, we know who there's nothing that could happen that would make me like regret my vote for Trump or regret my vote for Cornyn or regret my vote for Michael Burgess, my congressman. But there are tons of people in the mushy middle who go, I don't know. I kind of think that Trump is not great. So I don't know. And I don't like the virus. So Biden. And then, you know, 3 or 4 days later, still within the world of early voting, some Democrat does something absolutely terrible, or Biden, you know, has an aneurysm or something, and he goes, oh, I wish I could, I want to vote for Trump now. And it's not even election day yet. Early voting has always been a horrible, horrible idea. Now, I don't know what the solution is. Because even with early voting, you can still, on a given election day, stand in line for, you know, 10 hours. Well, maybe we just need 50,000 more polling places. Maybe we need a million more poll workers. Whatever we need to do, let's do what we need to do to honor democracy. And democracy is honored most highly by having everybody vote on the same day with the same information window. I've been willing to play ball in the following way. You ever have somebody say that election day ought to be like on a Saturday? Why is it on a Tuesday anyway when most of us have to work? Maybe Saturday and Sunday. Maybe voting weekend. I'll play ball with you. And I know that's one day of fudging on my, you know, same window of information premise. But look, just the week and a half, 2 weeks of early voting just for the birds. So there's the base code. So now here we are in virus land. And everybody's scared to death about being within 100 miles of anybody, and, you know, scared, and every polling place is going to be a super spreader. It's like, all right. And so for this year, it's kind of funny because maybe there's something about this lawsuit that has led me to kind of regret going soft on this a little bit. It's like, all right, it's all virus all the time, and if, and I don't want people not voting because they're scared to death of getting the Rona, and if we have maybe early voting under these circumstances might not be the devil's work that I usually envision it to be, and so that had kind of been my default setting. Well, then along comes Governor Abbott, who says, "Hey, because of the virus and because of concerns over the virus, maybe what we need to do is expand early voting even farther." It ordinarily, this year, would have started on Monday, October 19th. The Texas election code, if you care about things like this, 85.001, early voting in person begins on the 17th day before the election. The 17th day before the election and continues through the 4th day before the election. Now, one thing can jack with those numbers a little bit, and that's if one of them is on a weekend. And if that's the case, it gets pushed to the next regular business day. Election day is, of course, November 3rd. 17 days before that would be Saturday, October 17th. So it would be under ordinary world, ordinary life, virus never happened. Early voting would have started on Monday, October 19th. Well, guess what? Along comes Governor Abbott, who says, let's go 13th. Really? Well, okay. And that and we're all so beaten into submission about early voting. Well, listen, I'm beaten into submission about it this year, but most of y'all just love early voting, so whatever. And so October 13th, October 19th, whatever. Well, now along comes the lawsuit. The lawsuit from a long list of conservatives, conservative groups, conservative individuals who are filing suit against the governor, saying that he had no right to move the early voting date. State Republican Chair Alan West, Agriculture Commissioner Sid Miller, some members of the Texas legislature, a bunch of folks are part of this lawsuit. So, in looking at this yesterday, it all strikes me as one fairly simple to answer question, and that is, does Governor Abbott have the right to move the early voting date unilaterally? The lawsuit seeks to say that he does not. Okay. He obviously thinks that he does. This would seem like a yes or no question, doesn't it? Couldn't somebody settle this with about 2 minutes of Googling? Well, guess what? The answer is not really. So here's where I think this is going. And we can talk about this some, you know, we got 15 minutes today. We can talk about it tomorrow if you want to. First of all, why the lawsuit? I don't know if some of the folks involved in this are concerned about a broader voting window. You know, the rap against conservatives is you were trying to restrict voting and have fewer people vote, when actually what we're trying to do is have voting happen, silly us, within the law. In other words, people who can legally vote, that's why we love voter ID, and within the existing parameters of early voting. And just, you know, making crap up and saying, well, let's do, 6 days earlier. Wait a minute, what? Where does that authority come from? And it seems to be from two places called, number one, I'm the governor, and number two, pandemic. So can he do this? The short answer is he already has in some other areas. And you can like this or not like this. But the fact of the matter is that back in March, as the virus was just starting to place its hand on our necks, the then chairman of the Republican Party of Texas, James Dickey, and the chairman of the Texas Democratic Party, Gilbert Hinojosa, wrote a joint letter to Governor Abbott asking for 4 waivers of Texas election code law that involved the convention. Time and place of convention, notice of time and place, eligibility requirements, a deadline for filing certain rules. Every single one of these are part of the Texas election code. The party chairs asked Governor Abbott to waive them. He did. So there is precedent already for the governor, under special circumstances, pandemic, simply waiving portions of the Texas election code. So again, you can like this or not like this, and I don't know what I think about it. Every single bit of this makes me hate early voting even more. And in fact, honestly, I've had a little conversation with myself, and I said, you know, a pandemic doesn't make a true statement less true. Coronavirus does not have the ability to take something that is fundamentally true and make it less true. Every point I've made about the ridiculousness of early voting is still true, even with a virus slapping us around. So I'm just trying to be a nice guy. That's when I get myself in trouble. I'm just trying to play ball. Everybody's scared to death about the Rona. Okay, if you need a few more days of early voting, what's the harm? Well, the harm is, and here's what's funny. This is not me telling you that Governor Abbott was wrong to change the date. This is not me telling you that the lawsuit absolutely has merit. I don't know that it does. In fact, hand to God, I don't think the lawsuit succeeds. And for the reasons I've just described, the governor has waived some things in the Texas election code already this year. So the precedent absolutely exists. I think this is a lot of people who don't like extra days of early voting, either on principle or strategically or whatever. I don't like early voting at all, ever. So I think I'm going back to my default setting of that. So look for me to get even more ornery about that. But again, how I feel about early voting, how you feel about early voting, doesn't mean a lick to the central question of whether the lawsuit will succeed. I don't believe that it will. And it is filed by a ton of people that I love in a spirit that I tend to agree with. Now, their spirit may or may, there may or may not be some overall critics of early voting in this long list of people who are filing this suit. I think their main point, and it's the usual thing, Abbott's a dictator, he's doing things unilaterally, you can like or not like the unilateral gubernatorial change of the early voting date. I think the law, how can I phrase this best to wrap it up? Does the lawsuit have merit? I think it does. Will it prevail? I bet it doesn't. Meaning, here comes early voting, October 13th, unless the courts say otherwise. Never a dull moment. 9:50, Mark Davis, 6:60 a.m. The Answer. Thought we'd go back to the summer of 1974, a little Al Wilson and Show and Tell. Everybody, as Mike Krejci just told you, go to 660amtheanswer.com and click the contact us at the bottom of the page. If you got a business, you got $2,500, we will send it to the Heart for Lebanon Ministry, and you get an ad campaign here on the station. It's a wonderful thing. For producer Rhonda K. Moreland, at producer Rhonda K, R-O-N-D-A, capital K, Shane Bell of the Shane Bell Man, technical guru skills, and more. And News Ace Gordon Griffin. God bless our country, our troops, our families, our flag, our anthem, the things we believe in and we speak out for every day. Mike Gallagher is next. Tomorrow, the Friday show. Oh, my God. We'll answer the musical question, where the heck is Joe Biden every day past 10 a.m.? I believe he's in a bunker doing debate prep, meaning he may be over-prepared, which is trouble for a candidate who does have all of his marbles. So we'll see how that goes. And speaking of Tuesday night, go to IPI.org, sign up for the pre-debate Zoom session. We're going to have a great time. Look forward to seeing you there, and see you tomorrow for the Friday show.